Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Monday, December 29th. I'm Olivia Rose. 9 seismic monitoring stations across the Aleutians lost federal funding earlier this year and were set to shut down in November. But last-minute negotiations could keep them running. KUCB Sophia Stewart Rossi reports the stations are key for quickly issuing tsunami warnings in Alaska.
The Alaska Earthquake Center is currently in negotiations with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to restore funding for 9 seismic stations. In late September, NOAA told the center it would no longer fund their real-time seismic data flow to the National Tsunami Warning Center, a service the federal organization had been funding for decades. In a statement in mid-December, a NOAA spokesperson said the federal government was working on a, quote, potential funding mechanism to maintain the stations. A spokesperson for the Alaska Earthquake Center said they expect the funding by mid-January. Dave Snyder coordinates tsunami warnings at the National Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. He says scientists can make better decisions faster with more seismic stations. Snyder says the speed of earthquake detection is key to tsunami detection.
We are built for speed, so we have to do that part very quickly. And our aim is to get that first message out within 5 minutes of detecting the earthquake.
Several of the stations sit in the Aleutians, a region where large earthquakes are very common as the Pacific Plate slides beneath the North American Plate. Snyder says the Aleutian seismic stations matter most for nearby coastal communities, where every minute counts when detecting a tsunami. He says how quickly a tsunami could hit a community depends on the earthquake's strength, depth, and exact location.
For a really strong nearby quake, if there's one that's happening right along your coastline, it could be immediate.
Snyder says losing the 9 seismic stations in the Aleutians could delay earthquake detection by up to a minute.
Earthquake signals travel out and away from that epicenter really quickly. So even if there's one sensor is out in your community, there's going to be another one behind it and another one behind that.
One of the 9 seismic stations at risk of shutting down is in Unalaska, a city with a population of more than 4,000 people that sits right along the coast facing the Bering Sea. Here's Ben Knowles, Unalaska's fire chief and director of emergency services.
We want good funding for these agencies that help communities like ours with early warning and early detection. That's extremely important for us.
Knoll says there's a whole process when a large earthquake strikes in the region.
The National Tsunami Warning Center has an entire center of people that are dedicated to monitoring these things. We also partner with places like the Alaska Volcano Observatory, the Alaska Earthquake Center, the National Weather Service. And so they all work hand in hand.
If there is a tsunami threat, Knoll says the city alerts residents through the NXL system, social media, and sound sirens if necessary. KUCB also broadcasts emergency information over the radio. Alerts are also notified on the FEMA app, at tsunami.gov, and through NOAA Weather Radio. Whether the Aleutian seismic stations stay on or not, Snyder is confident his team can keep communities safe. But he says,
there's always room for more data, and any scientist would never disagree with that.
The Alaska earthquake staff are hopeful they'll have the funding by mid-January. In the meantime, the University of Alaska Fairbanks is currently funding the stations so that earthquakes in the island region are detected quickly. With KUCB in Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Sitka's Industrial Park Board recently approved a wish list of future shipyard improvements. The city wrapped construction on its new boat haulout at the park in September. The first phase cost the city just under $11 million. Park Director Gary White said he'd put pen to paper and wanted the board to further discuss what they'd like to prioritize in the second and third phase of the haulout construction, from essential to nice-to-have additions.
Of course, we want electricity out there. We want to do the site grading and the drainage. And then I think, you know, at some point, as this yard gets more busy, our bottleneck's going to be a washdown pad, adding another washdown pad in.
White said a list of priorities would be helpful for the Sitka Assembly as it develops its legislative priorities for next year and for securing grants to pay for the additions. Board members reviewed White's list, which included fencing, electrical work, lighting, and grading for the North Boatyard first, followed by similar updates for the West Boatyard. White estimated that Phase 2 could cost anywhere from $6 to over $9 million, with Phase 3 costing between $7 to $10 million. The park board unanimously approved the list of priorities. While Alaska is typically known for its idyllic nature and fishing, an electronic music scene is steadily growing across the state, with Sitka now added to the mix. KCAW's Ryan Cotter recently visited the studio of two childhood friends turned music production partners to find out how they're helping steward a new era of rave culture and future producers in Sitka.
On a sleepy and snowy Thursday afternoon, powerful synth chords and upbeat drums emanate out of the pantry of Ethan Vestola's family home, which has been repurposed into a makeshift studio. He's seated behind a desk squeezed between two professional speakers. He has a session pulled up on his laptop with a synthesizer and keyboard surrounding him.
Let's say like what, 80% of the production process is just sifting through sound, usually snares.
After experimenting with more sounds, Vestola then pulls up a different audio session of a song that he hopes will be part of his first production venture, alongside his producing partner and childhood friend, Dominique Smith, who is seated behind the keyboard. After reaching a good stopping point, the two trade seats so that Smith can take over from there.
And so what I'm going to do is, since I've been sitting in this chair, I'm going to pull up a synth for him, and then I'm going to let him have at it.
He takes a seat and observes the beats per minute that Vestola set.
129? What the hell's wrong with you?
I just wanted to be different than everybody else.
Oh, look at me. I'm Ethan. I'm different. I went 1 PBM higher.
Smith and Vestola originally met in Blatchley Middle School's music program nearly two decades ago, lingering in the practice rooms alongside a mutual friend to jam out together. As they got older, the two ended up going in different directions, with Smith moving to Anchorage for work in 2019, and Vestola attending college in Bellingham, Washington, where he befriended people in the local electronic music scene. The two then returned to Sitka in 2021 and 2022 respectively, both taking jobs at Search. While their passion for music has persisted throughout their lives, it wasn't until Vestola had a near-death experience that he was inspired to pursue music full-time.
I was hit by a drunk driver here in town. I just think that that was kind of the main thing that pushed me to kind of realize I was not doing all the things I need to do to feel fulfilled in life. It kind of solidified for me that this is what I want to do. So we'll make it happen by any means.
With Smith's encouragement, the two quit their jobs to pursue music production full time, culminating in Sitka's first large-scale rave this past August and another event on Halloween. Smith says they've been overwhelmed with the love and support they've gotten across Sitka in bringing the rave to life.
I know a lot of people that, like, on the day-to-day, like, oh, man, you know, I went to your last show. I didn't make it to the show before that. Or, you know, when's your next one? That's also been a big question. It's just been a lot of good support from the community at large. And that's been the nice thing about Sitka is they're always very supportive of anything and everything pertaining to the arts.
That's not to say that there haven't been challenges in bringing a rave scene to Sitka. Vestola says the delayed arrival of a haze machine, essentially a more subtle version of a fog machine, has made him unable to put his large containers of haze fluid to good use. So they're currently being shoved between his desk and the wall. And the challenges of bringing DJ and rave decorations like laser lights to a rural Alaskan town is something that Smith seconded.
This has just been the biggest obstacle, especially this time of year, given the constant weather changes and delaying with so much stuff. I mean, even during the summertime when we were getting set for our flagship show, you know, we had to deal with the challenges of getting some of our supplies and our other equipment here on time.
Despite these challenges, both Smith and Vestola agree that the joy of bringing an electronic music performance space to Sitka is deeply rewarding to them. To further provide more creative opportunities for youth in Sitka, Vestola has begun offering DJing and music production classes at his home to students of all ages.
My 7-year-old student that I work with, he navigates this equipment like he's been using it his entire life. Just kind of like seeing the eyes light up, you know, and having him just have ideas and like playing things on the keyboard, recording it down. Every moment like that for me is definitely very, very cool to witness. Have some little random some vocals in there, background stuff.
In response to their most highly asked question, what's next?
Yeah.
Smith and Vestola will be DJing Search's holiday party, a full circle moment for them to return to their former workplace while pursuing their passion. Vestola also plans to continue offering his lessons, and the two are currently working on planning next year's events and launching their music production venture. As they head into the new year with high ambitions, Smith and Vestola plan to keep the deck spinning in Sitka for a long time. In Sitka, I'm Ryan Cotter.
After more than 50 years, a family-run shop in downtown Juneau is closing its doors. The owner of Ben Franklin says the store has been part of the town's history and his own, and closing is bittersweet. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
With its Ferris wheel made of Kinects and model airplanes hanging from the ceiling, the Ben Franklin store was a landmark in downtown Juneau, drawing attention from passers-by, young and old. Now it's almost empty as people come and go to see what's left. Mike Wiley's parents bought the building and the store in the 1970s. It was a Ben Franklin, a nationwide general store franchise.
We sold everything from tennis shoes to pencils to bras and lampshades because there was no real store where you could get those kind of things.
Wiley was in middle school when his family took over, and he worked at the store every day after school.
I went to Maria Drake Junior High, which is over by Harborview. Walked over after school. Always was told, you have to come here, let's go to work, stay out of trouble.
That tradition continued with his own kids.
Our kids have worked here. We've had grandkids working here. We have no great grandkids working here yet, but as of now, we still have like two grandkids working here and helping out.
Juneau has changed a lot over the past 50 years, and Ben Franklin changed with it. Wiley says he thinks only people in their 60s and older remember the original franchise these days. Starting around the 1970s, the store adapted as tourism grew in Juneau.
There was maybe two or three gift shops in town, and we started carrying Alaska souvenirs. And it was the old steamships, like Canadian cruise lines and that kind of thing that came in here.
Wiley says he always made a point to continue selling things useful to locals, too, like housewares, frames, and toiletries. The nationwide Ben Franklin franchise was sold a few times and declared bankruptcy in the 1990s. It folded about 10 years ago, and the store became independent. He says the last few years were tough on business with the COVID-19 pandemic and supply chain disruptions. The store made it through, as it had for decades before. But now, he says, it's time to close the shop of his own volition.
Basically, it's the end of an era here. While we're closing up, it's just, it's time for me to retire. I've put 52 years in here.
Wiley says the responsibility of running the store has been on his shoulders for so much of his life.
You know, when you own a business, you're never away from it. And I just want the freedom to not have to worry about that.
The Wiley family, which owns the building, announced in September that they were going to close the store. It stayed open for the holiday season. There isn't much left now, some fabric and decorations, and a swordfish on the wall. As it empties, people have come in to share their memories of the store. Wiley says it's bittersweet to hear them.
Especially when everybody comes in and says, hey, I hate to see you go and whatnot. And, you know, we brought our kids in here when they were little kids. And my mom and dad brought us in here when they were little kids to purchase stuff and whatnot. So that, that part is kind of tugs at heartstrings.
Wiley says he plans to have a garage sale-style sell-off of whatever is left after the holidays. And he says he's had a couple of people interested in buying the century-old building. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
For KFSK, I'm Olivia Rose.